to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
We always get a great and diverse group in here. This one is at least as diverse as every other one, if not more so, and with lots of new faces. And to all of you who have come for the first time or haven't been for a while, welcome back. Thank you for coming, and please keep on coming. It's a great intersection of Berkman's longstanding interest in public media, radio in particular, in sort of collaboration, crowdsourcing, art, research, cross-disciplinary work, and creativity. And that is precisely why we were interested in, within the context of the Harvard Graduate Student Awards, interested in giving a small bit of funding to support this work, along with AIR, NPR, CPB, I don't know, just about everyone else. NPR just gave the airplay. They knew it, right? So lots of different supporters, of which we were honored to be a part of that group. For us, it was especially interesting because it is about this interdisciplinary work, about bringing Jesse from VES and the Graduate School of Design, James from Economics, Department of Economics here at Harvard, and Kara from outside Harvard, in fact, the journalist in the group. So these three together and with their extended team have put together just a marvelous, really thought-provoking project, which I think they're going to introduce and provoke you on some today in a way that really says, hey, we've started this quite remarkable thing. We talk a lot about Main Street, especially our politicians do, and we're actually going to tell you what Main Street looks like. And it's not just going to be we, these three, who tell you what it looks like, but we collectively are going to assemble our understanding of what it looks like. And I think it's a fabulous challenge to the Berkman community to say, okay, we've got this going, where do we go next? And how do we build upon this marvelous idea, platform, and community to create more wonderful, insightful, and otherwise productive things with it? So with that, I give you Jesse Chaffins, James Burns, and Kara Oyler.
Okay. Wow. That's quite the introduction and quite an audience. So we're very excited to be here with you today to talk about this project. And the title, as you can see, encompasses a lot of different ideas, and we'll try to touch on bits and pieces of these. But just to start off, to emphasize that this is a collaborative project from the beginning, and there's actually four of us that are the core creators, so the three of us, as well as Anne Hepperman, who's in New York, who couldn't make it. She's a public radio producer as well. And as Colin mentioned, and Sue Shard here, executive director from AIR, the primary funding came through an initiative called Makers Quest 2.0, which was sort of spearheaded by AIR with the support of the CPB to sort of pioneer new forms of public media that incorporated traditional broadcasts as well as digital sort of digital platforms. And then, as Colin said, the Berkman is part of this. So these are our sort of core partners to date. And the way that we think about this project is sort of a new genre of documentary, and what we've called sort of the collaborative documentary media project. And we'll talk more about what is sort of collaborative and documentary about this as we go on. But the basic sort of premise is that that we want to try to document all of the more than 10,466 streets that are named Maine in the United States. So this is a map of all those streets. These are the little over 400 that we've accumulated photos and videos of now, ourselves recording about 80, and participants over the last 6 weeks recording about over 300. So we're a little under 5%. So, but a pretty good pace, we think. And sort of the large idea is that really we see this as sort of creating a new map of the country through stories, data, photos, and videos that are recorded on actual main streets. This is a section a little bit about some of the kind of conceptual background that went into this. As everybody knows, Main Street and Wall Street was something that we heard a lot about last year, and that's when this project got started, was in the context of the election. And it was so important that even just to quote, Barack Obama mentioned it in his acceptance speech last November. He said, "Let us remember that if this financial crisis taught us anything, it's that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street while Main Street suffers. In this country, we rise or fall as one nation, as one people."
So, nice quote. But for us, it sort of was this interesting moment where we saw this, you know, this very potent political mythology that had a very uniquely spatial character. And we said, you know, there actually are these streets all over the United States that are called Maine. And so that's the inspiration for producing this. And so in a certain sense, the basic premise is that we're living in times of tremendous social, economic, political, technological, and cultural transformation. And for us, what we see as sort of fundamental to all these changes is something that Bruno Latour has called a crisis of representations. And that's both in terms of representational legitimacy, so in terms of leadership. But this was the part that we found really interesting, is the representation of change to the eyes and ears of the public. And so it's our contention that it's not only issues, but it's also popular mythologies and common language that are an integral part of what Latour called an object-oriented democracy. And so these images and turns of phrases circulating, you know, amongst today's networked publics, we really see as crucial forces in actually shaping political sensibilities and capacities for action. And so we see this as a political project, but one that kind of comes at it from a different direction by taking on this sort of this popular mythology of Main Street. And so we're approaching this from a documentary perspective from two different documentary traditions. The first is sort of the Soviet avant-garde. And this is the film Man with a Movie Camera, which some of you might know, by Dziga Virtov. And in this film, for us, what's very interesting is that this is the very end, and it's kind of getting all wild and crazy. But you can see very much a sort of experimental approach to the method of filmmaking. But the film itself is also a reflection on the process of media itself. And so what we've seen here already is the man with the movie camera. There's that audience that was sitting in a theater watching a film. That film is the film Man with the Movie Camera. And then you see the woman here editing the actual film. So it's all about sort of this introducing sort of a reflection on contemporary society, but also all the artifice that goes into producing media itself. And so that's something that we would love to try to at least approach in some form through this project. The other piece from Soviet documentary, or that period of time that we take inspiration, is sort of the theory and thought of a Russian formalist critic, Viktor Shklovsky, who wrote an essay in 1917 called Art as Technique. And we're really interested in this idea of art as an actual method, both as the way it can approach topics and it's through its approach produce new forms of knowledge. So for Shklovsky, what he wrote about art is he said, it's all about sort of perception. So he said, if we start to examine the general laws of perception, we see that as perception becomes habitual, it becomes automatic. Thus, for example, all of our habits retreat into the area of the unconsciously automatic. If one remembers the sensations of holding a pen or of speaking a foreign language for the first time and compares that with his feeling of performing for action for the 10,000th time, he will agree with us. Such habituation explains the principles by which in ordinary speech, and this is what we found really interesting in the way, you know, we constantly hear this term Main Street, we leave phrases unfinished and words half expressed. And so it's this thing that we just take for granted. We hear it all the time and don't really sort of question it. And so what Shklovsky then talked about is art's role. He said sort of habitualization devours works, clothes, furniture, one's wife, and the fear of war. A lot of things. If the whole complex lives of many people go on unconsciously, then such lives are as if they've never been. So it's this idea of sort of noticing in a different way. And so art exists that one may recover the sensation of life. It exists to make one feel things, to make the stone stony. The purpose of art is to impart the sensation of things as they are perceived and not as they are known. The technique of art is to make objects unfamiliar. And this is this idea of defamiliarization that we take inspiration from, to make forms difficult, to increase the difficulty and length of perception, because the process of perception is an aesthetic end in itself and must be prolonged. And so in that sense, we sort of see taking this very habituated term of Main Street, kind of turning it on its head and defamiliarizing it through all these other forms of sort of media representation. And the other documentary tradition is one from here in this country, and sort of the 1930s documentary work of Robert Frank and many people, photographers for the Farm Security Administration, and going out and sort of recording the stories and documenting through photography the everyday lives all around the country in a specific moment in time. And one more sort of inspiration is sort of in relationship to mapping. And we've been inspired by the work developed at the Stanford Humanities Lab, and we actually have the honor of having the founder, Jeffrey Schnapp, here today in the audience. In particular, we've been inspired by what his colleague, Michael Shanks, has called the deep map, which attempts to record and represent the grain and patina of place through juxtapositions and interpenetrations of the historical and the contemporary, the political and the poetic, the discursive and the sensual, the conflation of oral testimony, anthology, memoir, biography, natural history. And for us, it's that deep maps aren't just a hodgepodge of all forms of information, but it's sort of they thrive on this new meaning that can be produced through creative montage. So that's sort of some of the inspirations.
Slide, but it's not just to tell you prosperity is on the way, but also to sort of transition into the sort of the social science part of the title here. My training is in economics, so I'm about to make a bunch of broad generalizations about the social sciences, which probably most of you will dispute, but you know, broadly speaking, the social sciences are a data-driven discipline that's interested in causal relationships. And, we were looking at what causes a recession, what causes a boom, why do people behave in a certain way, why do people settle in a specific location, et cetera. It's this obsession with causal relationships has changed the way that we perceive data as a descriptor or as a descriptive element. I would like to say in the sense that data as describing a place or a location or an experience has been tied to causal ideas, you know. So you describe a city as being very large, and that connotes certain implications in the mind. So a large city implies certain things about it. And in this sense, descriptions that are purely quantitative or tend to be reductive in the sense that Jesse was just speaking of. And so my interest in this project has been, well, at least one of the interests has been how to use data in this documentary context, but to move away from using data as in the reductive sense. Let me jump to our data set. Our data set is, our object of interest is the set of main streets in the U.S. You know, so a little over 11,000, over 10,466 main streets in the U.S. And from an economist's perspective, this is sort of a set of things that no sane economist would ever be interested in, either as representative of the U.S. It's sort of lacking any nice random characteristics. There's far too many correlations and gaps, etc. On the other hand, there's something somewhat arbitrary about including something in a set because someone decided to attach the name Maine to it, to the street. Our aim in this project was certainly not to argue that the mythology of Main Street is incorrect. This is both obvious from a certain perspective and also completely wrong. Instead, we're interested in trying to understand how the positive side, I don't want to say positive or negative, to understand how we can use data and social scientific methods towards the goal of the descriptive without falling into this reductive sense. And so I feel I'm rambling a little bit, but I want to I kind of want to introduce this, and then sort of when we get into discussion, I want to, you know, when we talk about the actual site, we'll talk more about how we've tried to do this, and also about, you know, what are the open questions will be, you know, suggestions going forward of how to carry out this. I'm now going to hand it off to Kara, who's going to talk a little bit about some of the stories.
Right. Well, so to get started on these 10,466 main streets, we actually had to go to some of them. And so back in March, Jesse and I took a little preliminary trip.
Got it.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I'll leave that up to you. So back in March, we went from Boston to Chicago and stopped at probably about 20 main streets along the way to try and work on our methods. You know, what are our documentary methods? How would we start to do this? You know, one thing that we found, as a public radio producer, we often gather what we call vox pop, and we'll go out and we'll ask people to answer 5 questions on a certain topic. And I find that I have a success rate of about 1 in every 3 people. Usually, 1 will want to talk to me, 1 will say no, and 1 will just be kind of okay. And for whatever reason, Main Street, everyone talked to us. I mean, of the hundreds of people we interviewed, everyone wanted to say something, and people, in fact, stop you and ask you what you're doing in their town and then want to answer questions. So we found that was great, and then we took pictures along the way. And then in May, we traveled all around the United States from May to August, covering over 12,000 miles and stopping at about 100 main streets this summer. And part of this was to do a series on National Public Radio for Weekend Edition Saturday. And our first story was on Chattanooga, Tennessee.
We began a new series this week called Mapping Main Street. Back in May, producers Kara Oler and Ann Hepperman, along with economist James Burns and media artist Jesse Shapins, packed into a 1996 Subaru station wagon, began a 12,000-mile journey across the country. Along the way, they stopped at hundreds of streets named Main Street, collecting stories and taking photos. Over the next month, we'll hear stories from main streets across the country, starting today with Chattanooga, Tennessee. Now, a small portion of Chattanooga's main street has been revitalized with galleries, upscale restaurants, fancy sandwich shops. But some of the main street there remains a prostitution strip.
And now we'd just like to play you a small excerpt from this first story. That was Scott Simon, who I'm sure many of you recognize his voice. And this story was about partially about Tammy and Ernest, who are homeless people who live in a camp that's right on Main Street in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And so we'll just play you just a short part of that.
This is a probably kind of embarrassing moment. I'm kind of going through something. I'm ashamed of it. But it don't change it. I'm a drug addict. I'm going on a drug run. Honesty is, you know, what y'all looking for in this, right? But I'm going, I'll be 6 minutes. Time me.
I've seen him go through a lot of hard times. Ernest went to jail. I know that Tammy has worked the street. I know that she worked Main Street. I hope she'll never have to do that again.
I've never had a job down here. Only job I've ever knew was walking.
Okay, yeah, you can take a left, and this is Main Street.
Okay, so Tammy's a prostitute on Main Street, and Ernest sells drugs on Main Street. So that's, if you listen to the story, that you'll hear about their life. And then two people who are trying to revitalize Main Street and get prostitutes off of the street. And the other aspect of this project that we worked on was we commissioned 4 musicians and bands to write 4 songs. And they would go to main streets, gather field recordings, and then write a song about, it didn't have to have the word Main Street in it by any stretch, but just do their own interpretation of that place. And so you can see the 4 bands right here. And we're just going to play you a short excerpt from High Places, who went to LA which is a very urban Main Street. And so they also gathered video, and here's a short part of that.
Okay, so to tie this all together, we even have a slide for that. The project website. There we go. So the broadcast series. The citizen produced photos and videos and the commission songs. Go to the actual website. Okay. There we go. Okay, so this is the main page of the website.
MappingMainStreet.org.
Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when you get on the site, the first thing you see is the intro video, which we watched at the beginning of the presentation. We have a features tab, and this allows us to sort of feature so both the stories, so we have here the first Chattanooga story, as well as another feature of the Main Street songs, as well as particular contributions from various users around the country who've added their own photos and stories to the site. So I'm just going to go ahead and click on in Salt Lake City. We had a high school teacher. Oh, yeah. We've been talking here. Okay. We had a high school teacher who was part of Youth Voices, which is a national network of educators that collaborates on teaching youth to work with new media. And so he had his class go out and take photos of the Main Street in Salt Lake City. And so we have a large collection from all these different students, and so we're now featuring on the site. So what you see here on the left is the slideshow of the images from the students, and then on our right is what we call our navigator, and we have and the navigator tells us here where the current route is, and then it also places the cities that we'll be traveling through, and here the route is Utah. And we call this a relational navigator because the way in which the cities are ordered and connected to each other is driven by the user-generated data about the media that is in each Main Street. So, for example, Salt Lake City and Mendon, Utah have a larger distance between the two of them, whereas, say, Midvale and Myerton, Utah are closer together. And this reflects a notion of similarity that comes out of the way that the type of media and the tagging of the media from the different cities. So these are more dissimilar and these are more similar.
Gotta make sure the people in Germany can hear you.
All right, so, and then down here at the bottom, we have related routes. So, these down here are all tag-based routes. So we have the state-based routes, tag-based routes. So let's go ahead and click on one of them. Say, let's do construction. So this brings us to a new route. And now we're traveling from cities, from the main streets in different cities, where we have media that's tagged with the word construction. Just moving a little quicker here. And then down here at the bottom, we have another. Did you want to?
Well, yeah. In this case, I mean, there's this other visualization of the routes.
That's the map-based one. And I think, I mean, a lot of what we were really interested was getting away from Google Maps, and it's sort of that sort of singular image for sort of representing geography and showing all this juxtaposition and sort of crisscross. But yeah, that's all I wanted to show.
Okay, so you notice here we have an example. So we intermix, so video and still photo content seamlessly in the media player here. But I also wanted to just real quickly show you the other way to enter and navigate the site. So we could probably most people first coming to the site want to see what whether there's a main street nearby or in their city. So we can go ahead and type in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and yeah. Mm-hmm. So right here, so we just as we stepping away from Google Maps, this is the one instance in which we do see Google Maps. Here.
It's about the juxtaposition.
And so here we have a route that's just the images and videos from Cambridge, Massachusetts. We also can go ahead and type in a state, like California. And this will give us a route. Here. Mm-hmm. And so this is just you know, we can actually do one more example, I guess. And finally, if we search a city where there's no media, this will take us to the street view here, and it'll pops up a little message that suggests that you, well, I guess here Boulder doesn't have a street name, Maine. The nearest one is Louisville, and
yeah, found that error. Actually, click on what's that?
Oh, okay. Here we go. So, and it will suggest that you should contribute. So click here. This takes you to the participation page. And so this is a good time I want to talk about. So this just gives instructions on how to contribute your own media to the project. And so I just want to talk a little bit about the way that we actually structured the website, a little bit about the guts of the website. And one thing that we were really interested in is our site as being curatorial rather than archival. So we in fact use archival sites like Flickr and Vimeo to store all of the content that is displayed on our site. Now this, well,
I'll just click on that and show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oop. Seems we've lost the internet connection.
Maybe Flickr went decided to go away.
Yeah, it looks like Flickr is down right now. So that's one of the downsides of that. So so we use Flickr and Vimeo to host all of the content for our site. And I think we really have lost.
Did you want to say something?
And so if someone tags a photo on Flickr with mapping Main Street and then a city and state and puts it in our Flickr group, it automatically shows up on our website. And along the bottom part of this, you can actually see the most recent contributions. I know that that photo just came up this morning because I had noticed it online and asked someone to add it to the group. That one's from Ohio.
Right.
Down at the bottom, and it works the same way with videos on Vimeo.
Yeah, and I think part of, I mean, I think what James is saying, one of the things that we're really interested in is this idea of curating the internet as an archive. So we started with we knew from the beginning that there's thousands of images already of Main Streets and thousands of videos, and to use that as a resource, but to not just necessarily put every single photo and just have it just be this total mixture. So we invite specific images, and then they get organized through tagging in a relevant way. So that's pretty much it. So that's the website, and we're going to wrap up here really quick so that we can start talking to all of you more directly. I mean, in the last bit, we just wanted to say that there is. So we wrapped up this initial phase of the project with this grant and the first stories on Weekend Edition, but we've already been approached by many people interested in working with us. And so in New York, the public radio station there has a program called Radio Rookies. And we're working and doing a workshop with them and working with youth from the city to produce stories about Main Street and Flushing. And we got a grant to travel out to the Puget Sound region to produce stories about Main Street there. And also then partnering with the Third Coast International Audio Festival and their Filmless Festival, I've been invited to produce an exhibition in the central atrium of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago. So sort of translating again into another sort of venue and medium. So what we wanted to kind of talk to you guys about today was, you know,
this project's got a lot of things going on. A lot of different participants, a lot of different elements. And we find that really exciting, but it's also a challenge and sort of a question about how to go forward with that and what are some of the ways that we could grow this in different directions. And so we'd love to hear people's ideas and thoughts and have a conversation about that. So with that, thank you.
So, when you say contribute your story, are you talking about a print, a copy, as opposed to, say, sound, radio feedback?
Yeah, we ask people to contribute. We have a part on the site where you can write down the story, so that would be print. And then we've also had people post stories on Vimeo. We have one radio producer that's in California that's just been putting stories up on Vimeo as video. And so radio people can put up stories by just putting a still image if they want to. If you don't want to put a video, putting your radio story on there, attaching it to an image, and then it'll go onto our site if you tag it properly.
Can't you just put an audio story on
there? We made a decision to have no standalone audio player. We wanted it to be a media player where there was always something visual involved in it. And we debated it, but we decided that with the way that our site would work, we didn't want anything without a visual.
Exactly. So it's technically a video, but it's right. One image with sound.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know how we moderate this. Who talks?
So just a question, can any individual contribute content?
Yep.
How do you deal with login, authentication, privacy, security?
So one of the things, I spoke about this very quickly, was that we don't actually have users of our site. All of the users have been pushed onto the sites of Flickr and Vimeo. These sites do a wonderful job of storing photos and creating user accounts and all this sort of stuff that we would surely not do as well. The way that it works is that when you see a username of someone's photo and mm-hmm. it's posted up in the right hand corner, then we're actually just taking that from Flickr, their Flickr username, and posting it there.
Mm-hmm. So let's say I know about pictures that are not on Flickr that are OPL businesses on various main streets that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. How would I get them onto your site?
You have to upload them onto Flickr.
So I basically have to copy them from, wherever they are onto Flickr and then say, maybe put some notes saying where this came from.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's some instructions on your site as well, basically how to tag things so that you find them and so that it, so that it knows that this is Main Street in Bexley, Ohio, rather than Main Street in,
yeah,
Los Angeles.
Yeah. So the instructions are fairly, are fairly simple. We just, if you tag any photo or video on Vimeo with the city and state as two separate tags, okay, then we have a script that's running fairly constantly, yeah, and that will just pick up the media and bring it into the site. And that was something that we really wanted to work on was to have something that was automatically curating new content. So this was something, as it grew, we wouldn't have to look at every image or every video and decide where it went and how it related to other media on the site.
Do you know sort of what the demographics are of all these main streets? I mean, have you guys crunched that data? Do you have them broken down by urban, suburban, rural, or any sort of methods?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So we have a lot of raw data, and it's been which hasn't been parsed and put together as nicely and to answer the questions directly that you have. And part of that is lack of time constraint, so going through all this data. But one of the things, and so this sort of leads to one of the questions is that we have and that we're thinking about now is what to do with this sort of data and how to bring that into the site.
You could fairly easily do links to census tracts, zip codes, et cetera, where you can get demographic data, fairly complex data.
Right, so, one thing we're...
obviously, you've got to prioritize. You've got a lot on your plate.
Right, so going again, though, one thing that we're... concerned with is we don't want people to come to our site and see, you know, Main Street in Bacota, Washington, and say, ah, let me, you know, click on this, and it takes them to a set of summary statistics about that Main Street that says this is you know, the average house price, you know, this is, you know, it's all retail or it's residential or whatever. Because this goes back to this idea of, you know, is our documentary just a set of statistics that tells you about a place? And so, you know, the relational navigator is something that we're interested in developing further. And so some of the things we thought about is using a lot of this data to inform what that relational navigator will look like. So bringing together cities that have similar housing, you know, infrastructure or something like that. So these are all user-generated data now. This is based on similarity of tags.
Jeff?
Ensuring that you don't have too strong a concentration of material being uploaded around certain main streets where the demographics are such that, you know, you have likely content creators mm-hmm. versus other main streets which mm-hmm. are abandoned. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of like meta sort of mode of visualizing the collective effort of this distributed community that allows you to see how the documentary is actually being produced so that you might even condition behaviors in terms of the content producing
yeah.
community?
So, that's a very good question. So these are a couple of works in progress that if we went back, early in the slideshow, we had an image of the, you know, so dots of all the main streets in the country, and then we had the red dots for those that were documented. And this was done in a programming module called Processing, maybe some of you are familiar with. So part of what we've been working on with that has been trying to capture some of these ideas of, you know, where are we seeing lots of contribution versus less contribution, but doing it in an interesting way. As far as curating the site and showing how much content shows up, you know, so you don't just go to the site and see just photos of Los Angeles because that's a really big city. We have a fairly simple at the moment algorithm for the interestingness of different media. And we use that to prioritize different types of media. And right now we don't have such a big problem with drastically different types of, different amounts of contribution, but in future if that comes up, that'll be how we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
Is there any vision for how all this media can go back and make change within the community or drive policy or you said you started from a political place. Is one of your hopes to sort of go back to inform politicians or to remind, you know, them maybe this is what, it's sort of implicit, but I'm wondering if there's any, you know, anything built into the site or if you're thinking about building things in the site to inspire civic engagement within communities.
I think there's one of the, there's lots of different ways that could go. And I think, at the beginning, we're very interested in this idea of politics not exclusively being policy as well. But in the case of, say, the Chattanooga story, it turned into a very heated debate in the city, actually. It became the most viewed story on NPR.org. And you had a very intense back and forth in comments where many people felt like it was extremely misrepresentative of their town. They said, you know, we've invested all this money in downtown revitalization. We've got this great aquarium, not on Main Street. And we have these like four blocks where there's, you know, some nice new restaurants and art galleries. You know, why don't you just talk about that? You know, we have, of course, there's been prostitution, but that, you know, that existed 20 years ago. You know, maybe there's a little bit of homelessness, but this is the story of Chattanooga. How could you not tell that story? And then other people said, yes, of course, we know that story. That's what the local news is always telling us. What about this other side? This does exist. We don't allocate resources adequately to deal with homelessness. And so in a certain way, it became this, you know, wedge in a way to facilitate a conversation in the city about resources and sort of, you know, policy decisions. So at this point, we don't know if this has directly led to more money being given towards homelessness in the city, but it is sort of in that spirit of fostering a certain type of debate. Rekha?
I think that is kind of the question that I'm having as well, which is, the forms of media that you're inviting on the site and the ones that you're then outputting in a more curated manner. So, you know, it seems like photos and videos are coming into the site, but you're kind of synthesizing things into audio pieces. I'm curious, you know, from the invitation perspective, when you invite user contributions, you say that there's the only thing that has to happen is that it was taken on Main Street. What about when you go to do an audio report about it? Then what defines, okay, so we all agree that this is about Main Street, something's labeled Main Street. So when you go deeper, what are the other themes or criteria that you use to guide yourselves in synthesizing the information you're getting, as well as for someone like me just coming to the site and seeing a bunch of photos of flags or, you know, street signage or whatever, like what am I supposed to get from this as well?
This is several parts of that question.
I know, sorry.
I mean, as far as rules for ourselves for what types of stories we are gathering, it really, we decided not to make rules. You know, one of the things that we are very interested in is just this idea of documenting the country at this moment in time. And so, you know, we would go to one Main Street and a woman was talking about how she used to be a flight attendant. And Frank Sinatra came on the plane one day, and she just, you know, she was just standing on the corner with her dog and really wanted to tell that story, and that seemed like a relevant story to put up on the site. You know, so it, and then sometimes we went to Chattanooga with the intention of documenting the street that we knew was a prostitution strip, you know, and we did that on purpose.
But I think, I mean, this is something that I think is very unresolved, and I think is something that I think, I mean, at this point, in sort of the initial, in this first phase, we were, you know, we could have had a site where you would see a lot of Barack Obama and, you know, John McCain, and you would see the news coverage of Main Street. There's, we thought about doing that. But what we kind of, in this first moment, we kind of wanted to do was have it, I mean, it is, it's extremely open. You're going to come to this site, and there's people that come here, and they love historic preservation. And they're like, this thing is amazing. This is all about that lost small town America.
But the archives, you said you're archiving it, though, on Flickr and Vimeo, and have they weighed in on that? Like, are they cool with that? Like, does that...
Flickr and Vimeo?
Yeah, the idea of arc, if they're approaching this as an archive, but it's a distributed archive, do they like that? I mean, are there talks about putting it in some place where they...
So who are you talking like about? They?
In this case, the historical preservationists.
That hasn't come. I mean, I think that there's. I mean, isn't like Flickr is being used by a lot of museums and libraries as as a real. I mean, but there are clear. There's real issues with this long term in terms of what, you know, what is Flickr's future, Yahoo's future. You know, we've talked to people here at the Citizen Media Law Project and try to actually figure out also our rights and to structure some of that relationship. But I guess what I was getting at is that it's about at this phase we're really interested in having it feel very open. I'm not sure that's always going to be the way that it is, but that's part of, I think, the attraction and kind of the, what something like Robert Frank's Americans does is that people from very, very different perspectives are able to read into that and develop some sort of sentiment and take something away. And I think we were interested in trying to, at least in this phase, have that character.
And just one last aside, when we first started, we did make a list of 10 things that we wanted people to take photos of. And then we decided against that. Once we actually went out there and tried to do it ourselves, we found that it just really detracted from the whole experience. And and we wanted people to document what they felt like was representative to them or what was important to them. So.
How do people find out about you then? Where are you able to sort of document where people are coming from to the site? I mean, obviously it's through NPR, but on top of that, and how do you break that down?
I mean, at this point, we introduced the project on NPR, I guess, 6 to 8 weeks ago, and that's been the primary sort of outlet today. We haven't done any significant outreach and publicity, but that's something we very much intend to do. But and we do have analytics that show us, you know, what links are driving to the site. But to date, it's been largely NPR. I don't know. Somebody that hasn't said something.
Slightly different question. I'm just searching up some images of Robert Frank's Americans, and it's very much people-driven.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at your site very much, and I haven't listened to anything. From what I've seen, it's very architectural, and there are actually very few people. And that is the case that some streets are just populated, or there's some people on the streets. But it's interesting to me that it's feeling as spatially oriented and not. Well, no, there are people, but there aren't many people. So if I were to, there isn't a main street in Chicago, but if I were to film my main street, would I be my friends? It's just interesting that.
That's a really good question. This, for whatever reason, that is probably the more of the cross section we just showed you. Yeah. But there's one of the routes that we featured at the very beginning was people. So there's over 600 photos that are tagged with people. It's one of the longest. And then this is somebody in Richmond, Indiana, who's a professional photographer and takes pictures of people on Main Street there. And they're fantastic. But, and that's, you know, so it is, so there's those different dimensions. If we didn't, that was also one of the apprehensions. I mean, because for people, like, so myself coming at this from design and architecture, Main Street people really think of a certain building type from the late 19th century in downtown small town America. And so we were very much wanted to not get too close to say that that narrative and those organizations right away, because it didn't want to feel like this was a place to sort of just look at architecture from a certain period in time. And I think that at this point we've been able to get away from that a little bit.
Have you considered what happens in a city such as Boston, where conventional wisdom says the place where most everything is happening is not called Main Street. It can be argued it's Massachusetts Avenue or Dorchester Avenue or Blue Hill Avenue.
Right.
I mean, what? So does Boston not get, you know, not part of
something? No. Boston's very much part of it. We should. It's
or other cities where the main drag is not called Main Street.
Yes. Miami, for example, not part of it. Because they don't have a Main Street.
Boston's got lots of Main Streets.
No, but I guess, that was a really... So in terms of communication, has been a challenge, because people, when they hear the word Main Street, not just in a political context and thinking about places, they do think about the Main Street of a city. Like, and this is actually, there's a really nice little anecdote. I was just visiting a friend, Molly, in San Francisco, and she said, you know, San Francisco doesn't have a Main Street. It's Market Street. You know, like here, we don't really have a Main Street. It's Mass Ave. And I think that for us, what was interesting is specifically actually these instances where you don't, where it doesn't again correspond. It's another moment of sort of defamiliarization where it's opening up and taking you to a part of a city that you maybe don't normally pay attention to. And you suddenly have these places also, like we've been to Main Streets where there's not any buildings at all. We're in the middle of a field in Texas. But it's also called Main Street. And so it's this playing with this idea of data where you take this semi-arbitrary data set and you just go with it.
Said that in one of the cities there was this professor and that worked with the kids, and they are part of a network of professors around the country. Do you think of engaging in this type of network and bringing the youth or bringing a certain population to contribute in a more active way?
Yeah. Mean, so far, I think that we're definitely starting to talk about that. In this case, Youth Voices is a nationwide network of teachers, and they've already had a public meeting where people all have a conference call and do the live chat, and teachers from all over the U.S. are starting to use it, and that's without us. It's interesting to see what happens without us actually even trying as hard, you know, to see how that naturally progresses as well.
I mean, I would say at this point we've been approached by more people than we can really, than we've had time to sort of respond and figure out exactly what, you know, we know what direction and who we're going to be working with and that sort of thing.
But educators have been a huge, they've, from the beginning, were very, very interested. And because in this case, what the guy in Salt Lake City said is, he said, it's a great opportunity. We want to, you know, they want to find a way to get people in the community to pay attention to the world around them and to look at details and use, he's a photographer, photojournalist, and says, this is a great way to just give a very simple assignment, go to the street and take pictures. And then it's part of this national project, and I guess, you know, they see when the kid who took this photo that's featured on the homepage, when he saw that there, was, you know, he was of course really excited. And that's all just through this platform. We didn't have to do anything. in terms of management, they're just able to do that completely independently.
Yeah.
There seems to be two different levels on which the politics operate in this, or multiple different, but I'm going to talk about two. On one hand, there's the national level, of course, of Main Street and the political reason for this project, which is very powerful, and it really opens up the concept of Main Street and small town America, and that's what you're doing, and it's obviously effective. But on the other hand, that open, so that takes the meaning and sort of in a paradigmatic fashion opens up the meaning of what a Main Street is. But then on a local level, it operates very differently, as some of the other comment people have brought up, and it almost seems to close down meaning on a local level. That because on the city level or on the town level, Main Street sort of defines the city in sometimes unwanted ways, as you found out in Chattanooga. So there, in a way, that the project is in opposition to itself, you know, in terms of how it's playing with Main Street and what it wants to do for that concept.
There's instances where Main Street is the central place in a town, and then it becomes this conversation about the identity of the town. And that, to a certain degree, Chattanooga exists in that category. And then there's this, the aspect of it where it doesn't, where say the Cambridge side or the San Francisco, where it's not the street that you normally associate with representing the town. I think in that instance, it doesn't mean to say that then suddenly that street does stand in for the city. It's just another way of pushing people to look in different places. And I think that, and it's also, you know, for people in a town to go to a place that they might not normally associate as a significant location, like not the monument, not the sort of central square, but some place that's just a little bit off and look differently. How, like, the politics of that we could talk about, and it's a lot about aesthetics and politics and the role of art, but I think that that's sort of one, that other local dimension that we're interested in. I guess part of that, too, is this aspect of people like ourselves going to places that they might not normally go to, in a different way of almost traveling to places.
Yeah. Like 30 seconds of context for what you guys are doing?
No.
So I thought it might be useful to provide just a minute of, so these guys are one of eight projects that were part of this Makers Quest 2, MQ2, Makers Quest 2.0 project. And I would say they are probably the most complex and multi-dimensional one of all of the eight. But the premise of this project and the whole context is that in this dramatically changing world of media, driven by technology and digital media that's exploding around us, is that the inspired individual producer is what is driving change. That it starts at the level of the individual inspired maker. So what we were seeking to do, the hypothesis was, what if we turned to the individual producer and set them loose to help us through the transition from public radio to public media, a new multi-platform method of storytelling. And that is sort of the larger context. They had 5 months, a very modest amount of money, and what they came out with at the end is, you know, just pretty extraordinary in 5 months' time what they invented.
When the funding runs out, or are you just going to keep going?
I mean,
when you get all 10,000?
That's where I feel like we're actually, Jeffrey's question about this visualizing the progress will become very interesting. I mean, it is already, and we'd love to get that to become a part of the site, but I'm really looking forward to that moment where there's that one dot that's black still or some whatever. And then it's, you know, the race to the finish line of, you know, getting to that place. And I think we'd love to try to actually fulfill this crazy idea.
It's user-generated content, so you don't have to cover 10,000.
Right, we wouldn't have to. So, exactly. So, and that, at a certain point, I mean, if there was, through the right, you know, communication and people, if the people, you know, there's over, you know, billions of people who live in the United States, you could, Millions. Sorry, James does the numbers.
Hundreds of millions. We're going hundreds.
Anyhow, you could pretty quickly maybe do that if a lot of people participated.
Yeah.
I mean, getting to some of the questions about, you know, why Main Street, it also seems that I think in most places, even if it's now like some little rundown, forgotten corner of a city, most streets named Main Street originally were intended to be or were like the main street in the town. And I think one of the things that would be nice to have some depth is some of the history of some of these streets.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of them, you know, were once a really, really prosperous part, and it's really run down now, or they've always been the center of the town. I think finding some way to encourage people to put up some more of the history of these spaces would be interesting, because it's the story of how, like, why was this the main street, even if it isn't anymore.
I think it's a great, I mean, we have had bits and pieces of people sharing older imagery, but I think that that's, I think it's something we'd love to do, and I think that could be sort of, at a certain point, I think what would be really fun is that you could develop a lot of sub-projects within the project.
And I think one piece that might help some of those questions about, you know, why Main Street as opposed to Mass Ave, which is it, is that if there was a section that said, why is this Main Street? You know, I think it might get people to think of it in a terms that aren't just like, oh, this is this dull history.
Right.
But, like, why did it get that name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
I'm interested in the politics of this because it seems to me that every Main Street has a totally different politics, you know. And so, like, if you look at Main Street in Flushing, you know, that's very different from Main Street in Valley Head, West Virginia. And so it seems like, I mean, while you say that it has sort of a political, you know, there's political overtones to it. I mean, I'm studying like rural school consolidation, which to me is much like Walmart consolidation, you know, which is essentially gutted Main Streets. And so. So that's a very particular political milieu, but then the Chattanooga story is all about urban revitalization or attempts at it. So it's almost, I mean, I wonder about putting history up because that's a particular person's history of it. And it does change it once you get, then you're competing with not just alternating visual images, but alternating, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but you're competing with alternate overt narratives of how the main street, of how that main street came to be what it is. And that's a very ill thought out idea, but just toss it out there.
It's definitely extremely subjective. I think that most, you know, because we show up and I find, you know, I'll talk to someone and ask them a certain line of questions and that'll be totally based on my interests at that moment, you know, or someone who takes pictures is taking something that catches their eye specifically. So I'm not sure we could ever make an objective portrait unless, as a whole, looking at all of these things all together, we somehow find some kind of objectivity based on tiny pieces of subjectivity. But it's an incredibly subjective map, I think. Mm-hmm. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of that, I mean, I think that this issue, I mean, this is exactly what I think Bruno Latour, this issue of the crisis of representations, is this tension also with the, and touches on the role of media within politics, that it's not just politics, it's not just what you understand politics to be in terms of policy and what you think of as decisions made by leaders. An important part of that is how all of these decisions in all different facets of life are represented to the body politic. And that's where it's this representation. And in that sense, it's about providing a different space. It's a certain critique, in a way, also of the media, you know, of the standard. And we found, I mean, the stories on NPR have provoked. And a lot of people said, why is there a story about this small town in Montana where their creek runs under the main street? Why is that news? NPR, tell me, why should I care? And I think the part of what we're asking is, you know, pushing back a little on news as being just the story about a certain type of politics. Yeah.
So have you guys found the first Main Street?
No, we have not.
No.
But that's an interesting question.
We're sitting on it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think one interesting thing that's striking about your presentation is you say you want to capture Main Streets at a particular point in time. But this project itself is extended in time, and you're going to get pictures of the same place over time.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's any way that you have built in or any thoughts about having, like, almost like the evolution of Main Street as the project grows and builds.
Yeah, someone at one point suggested that we have people also tag with years.
Yeah.
You know, so there could be a chronological kind of journey.
So even I'm sure that data is probably just built in.
Yeah, we do. We get the date when the photos are taken, and we have all of that data in terms of, you know, because most of the stuff is digital. I mean, some of it's scanned in.
That's only if it's new photos.
Yeah, some of them are scanned in. You get some data sometimes of when that was uploaded.
Right, but you could we could have those ones be tagged. That's a really cool idea, though, and a good, really good point.
First, there's so
many.
I was wondering, and I checked out the site. Is there a way to sort of travel it geographically? Like, I know I was looking at it for like my area, which is Columbus, Ohio, and there are like these beautiful, you know, it's like one like particular like suburb of Columbus where there are like it's like a beautiful theater and like all these other things. And I know that on that main street, as you travel sort of towards this place called Whitehall, you start to see more like strip malls because it used to be like big truck route. And then, like, do you not strip mall, like strip clubs, basically. Oh, but I don't think that you can, like, if you do it like this, like, are you getting it that way? If it's tagged as, like, Whitehall versus like, Columbus, because I think it has a different zip code. Like, this is what you do, and this is not. This is not
right. No, that's... That would be, I mean, there's one of the things we'd love to do. I mean, there's many other ways to visualize and organize this information. One, like to a much more fine-grained spatial organization, like where you can almost have a panorama where you would travel down the street, would be one thing that could be interesting, but we haven't done that yet.
I mean, one point is sort of in all of this, I mean, going back to the date thing and all of this, is that, you know, just in terms of practicality, we were really into the idea of making this as simple and accessible as possible. So, you know, right now you have to tag it with the city and the state. You know, we could easily have built this on geotagged photos, of which there's a huge collection, but of course this is just a tiny subset of all photos. So, and we could ask people to, say, you know, tag it with the address where it was taken, so much more fine-grained, but, or even go through our website and do that sort of thing. But I think at the moment we've tried, you know, we've sort of tried to strike a balance between the amount of information we can get and the simplicity of contribution.
Have you thought at all about what means street is a specifically American phenomenon that none of the countries that I've ever been to ever have other main streets?
Mm-hmm. There are streets named Main in other English speaking countries. Like Canada has quite a lot.
In Brazil, like the commercial street or the market street.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know how to translate it into languages I speak.
Yeah. Like in Germany it's Hauptstrasse, which would translate to Main Street, but that's not as common. But that is so, I mean, it in a certain sense, if you take it, and that's again where this is a little like if you take it as about, you know, the street that is the primary corridor of a town or a city, of course that's a universal characteristic of places around the world. Every place in some way might have a street or two that have a certain type of, but that would be approaching it from a very architectural urbanistic perspective, and it doesn't, so in another country maybe is a totally different word, and it's just taking that word and following it.
On that, I was just in New Brunswick, Canada, which is an officially bilingual province of Canada. And I don't know, about 15 times I saw Rue Main Street. That's the way to do this. The question I have is whether you've ever had to take anything down. You know, like you get to the main street where there's a prostitution strip and you get a picture of a prostitute actively plying her trade, or something of that nature, that nobody's done anything to fool with you.
Basically no, but one. we did have one example. It wasn't so much it was more an issue of content that the person in the photograph was not happy about being in the photograph. And so that was basically the only incident. We haven't had any sort of obscene material or you know, material that has nothing to do with Main Street as far as we know.
Okay.
So pretty much everything we see looks like pictures taken on a street and you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought that was a very sort of catchy phrase, but it's also something about archive as opposed to civic engagement, conversation, all these more dynamic aspects of it. So could you elaborate a bit on what you exactly meant when you said
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, I mean, there's a sense that, I mean, we have now online unbelievable repositories of information of all different forms, and in particular, you have different, you know, often produced in different media formats. And so, you know, a traditional archive you might think of as rows and rows of papers and maybe a few images, you know, stuck in some basement somewhere. And this is actually something we were talking about last night. And in the archive, I guess in a certain sense, is something that also has very kind of fairly closed access. It's not a particularly democratic institution. I mean, to access Harvard's archives is not the easiest thing in the world. But the internet is sort of, in a certain way, and it's this question, I guess, it's maybe a transition of the archive to the database, where the database is sort of an open, depending on how it's structured, but trying to turn sort of, the project is a database-driven site, you know, that is then transforming an archive, say this public archive, something like Flickr and Vimeo, and sort of taking out bits and pieces and organizing those into a database that can then grow and is publicly accessible. That was a really rambling answer. I guess curating is to say that, you know, providing some logic through which that information can be accessed.
Structure.
Context. Some structure and context. Anybody?
It is also the Internet Archive, the organization right. That is archiving yeah. The entire right. Internet every yeah.
Right.
Know,
and I guess, and that's why the word, I mean, the word, it's, you know, it's not like, so, you know, is it very interesting to type in the word Main Street into Flickr? Kind of, you know, and that's part, you know, there, you start to get different images. But there's the curatorial part, I guess, is that we've made that far more structured and complex, where you take, you know, the Internet Archive, it's, you know, it's useful for a certain thing of sort of being able to access a website that no longer exists. But the Internet is being this constantly evolving depository of media that could then be repurposed and reframed is, I think, what we're interested in. Yeah. Yeah.
Existing anonymous.
Yeah.
Previously.
Yeah.
Are you guys taking all of your, like in terms of like audio or video, you guys are taking like everything that goes up? Or, because I feel like with photos, maybe it's easier to just like be like, well, we'll just take everything. But like with, if you wanted audio with it, like sometimes it could be maybe like below the quality that you're
right.
So you're
like, yeah,
you yeah. Deal with that.
Yeah. User generated audio is often
yeah.
Quite boring.
Well, we are planning to, at some point, set up a phone line where people could answer a question, and we've made a decision to not have those automatically just show up on the site. We'll listen to them, cut them down, make sure they're interesting. Because, yeah, it would be bad to have, like, a 15-minute rambling conversation,
yeah.
And we yeah. Will curate that, or
I guess,
aim to
yeah.
Not do that.
I mean, so some of the, I mean, the people that have contributed... Well, so we can go ahead and listen.
I want to give you a tour of Main Street. This is our main road in Dayton, Ohio. I want you to see my town for what it is as I drive through this community on Main Street. This video may take a little long for you, so just look at the houses, the businesses, and some of the points of interest that Dayton has. And once we get into the city limits, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I guess part of that, I mean, in terms of, that was part of, honestly, the decision about audio and video. I think that there's something, I mean, we could debate this. I think that it's very, I think that just listening, the experience of media consumption online, I think it just looking, just the standard audio player, it's already such a visual experience that I think it can get, that having some other piece of information, like an image, that alone, even if it's semi-rambling for 30 seconds, makes it a lot more interesting. And that's why the choice to just make it video. So we're running out of time.
Take one last question.
Is there a way to link things that are not audio or visual to your site? For instance, there's a website that I contribute to called cinematreasures.com, and it attempts to document every movie theater, actually, well, all over the world now, but especially in the U.S., and people attach all kinds of, you know, posts and you know, blog entries and the like to every movie theater, talking about, you know, what the theater meant to them or what they know about its history and so on. And it'd be sort of cool to tie your site to that site somehow
yeah.
For those theaters that happen to be located on
yeah.
Main Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
But I don't know, is there a way to link something that is not a picture or an audio video presentation to your site?
Not.
Well, as of now,
not
we
yet.
There's a blog where we can
kind of talk, where there's other forms of content that can sort of be curated and put there.
Because that's all text, the thing I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah. The blog. Yeah, that's a good idea. What is it called?
Cinematreasures.com.
Always good to end on a new idea.
Yeah.
So with that, I thank all of you, and please join me in thanking you.